Before we start the show, I want to thank the thousands of you, the thousands who have read This Book Will Make You Dangerous. Many of you have told me that the book's unique way of exploring fear, confidence, and purpose has had a lasting impact, that it's much easier for you to get clarity and direction about what really matters and what you want to do in this lifetime. It's also amazing to hear that quite a few of you have read it multiple times and even bought copies for friends. So thank you again. Just in case you weren't aware, I created a free companion video course for the book. And in these videos, I walk you through the big takeaways and practices from each chapter. And I even cover some extra stuff that's not included in the book. Information on how to access the course is in newer versions of the book. And if you own an older version of the book and you don't know how to access the course, just hit me up via the contact form at triplanier.com and we'll get you all set up. And one last thing, if you're one of the thousands who have already read the book, please consider leaving an honest review on Amazon so that others can decide if it's right for them. Again, thank you so much for reading This Book Will Make You Dangerous. And now let's start the show.
You are listening to The New Man Beyond the Macho Jerk and the New Age Wimp. Your host is men's coach and group facilitator, Trip Lanier.
Are you one of those guys who tries to make a change but find yourself right back where you started just a few weeks later? Is it possible to arrange your life so that making a positive change is more automatic than struggle? And why are there little bees or flies painted inside the urinal? This week, we'll explore how you can create positive habits that stick and why hope alone is the raw material of losers. Welcome to The New Man. Today, we're talking with Michael Brooks and Josh Summers. They're the authors of The Buddha's Playbook, Strategies for Enlightened Living. Welcome to the show, guys.
How's it going, Philatrip?
So I wanted to talk with you about this problem that shows up for so many guys, that they're waking up to the fact that more is possible for them, and yet they just can't seem to develop the practices or disciplines necessary to get out of their rut. I mean, how can we make this really simple and talk about the guy that just wants to finally have his New Year's resolution stick?
Well, I think we're all familiar with the age-old problem, New Year's resolutions, where the guy sets the intention to join the gym, get the yoga membership, get a new diet in place, finish the screenplay this year, write the great American novel, any one of these things. And then they sort of bust out gung-ho first few weeks of January, and by February, they're back in the old, same old rut that they have found themselves in for year after year, and nothing really changes. Does that sound familiar?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I get emails from guys constantly. I've even done videos about this on my websites. It just seems like the hardest thing. And a lot of guys are bummed out because they're listening to The New Man and they're getting a glimpse of all this other stuff. And they're like, shit, I can barely get by on what I'm doing right now. So how do we how do we give this guy a crutch? How can he start to do this stuff?
What motivates people to actually take up these resolutions is, it's just that. It's sort of this, it's this hope that this year things are going to be different. And the hope, or the feeling of hope, is what is fueling the resolution in itself. And one of the lines that we like to quote a lot in our seminars is that it comes from a Chilean management guru who says, his name is Fernando Flores, and he says, "Hope is the raw material of losers."
Hold on a second. Hope is the raw material of losers?
Exactly. Hope.
No offense to the president, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, I remember a lot of stickers around a year and a half ago that were. Okay.
We kept that line quiet during the election.
Wow. So what are we really saying? What does that mean? Hope is the raw material of losers. What does that really mean?
It means that people sort of try to get by only on good intention and don't really take into account all the hidden forces, both within and then within an environment externally, that drive real behavior.
Let me see if I got it right. So you're saying that They're like, all right, hopefully this year is going to be different, but they're not taking into account, like, they've got all these other things that are supporting them and staying where they are. There's like, there's these invisible things that keep them put, right?
Exactly. There's things in their immediate environment, like in their home, in their office, at work, that sort of keep them in a rut. And then there's also internal environmental cues, beliefs, ways of mentally framing things that sort of keep people held or keep guys held in this in particular ruts.
So no wonder why he's getting stuck is because he's not taking into account all the things that are keeping him there.
Exactly. And so, and then you just, what happens is the resolution is really driven just by this good intention, but it's I guess it is. Good intention in itself is impotent against all these other forces.
All right. So let's get some examples here. What are we talking about?
I think it can go many different ways. One real standard way is you get the resolution to hit the gym on a regular basis. And then inevitably what happens, a couple of days are missed. And then the old track starts playing. Wow, I missed 2 days. Jesus, I'm a lazy lout. I've always been this way. And that energy comes in and then derails the good intention.
So he's got an idea in his mind that he needs to be perfect. Is that it? That he's like, if I don't do it perfectly, it's just not going to happen.
Exactly. Perfectionism is one of the things that really derails and undermines any kind of sustained discipline. If someone really wants to develop a disciplined habit or approach to both transformation, you have to build in or acknowledge or allow a kind of moderate sloppiness that says, oh, you know what? It's going to be good enough if I just do this, and then if I miss a day, I'll pick it up again tomorrow.
That's huge, because so many guys take on whatever it may be, and if it isn't perfect, and I've even noticed this in myself, that, man, if I don't do it perfectly, I just start to beat myself up. Man, it was easier doing what I was doing before, which was just kind of fucking off. So, I love that this moderate sloppiness. I love that.
If you define yourself as someone who's trying to get to the gym, who is trying to lose weight, or who is trying to write that book, the trying allows for failure and to a certain degree allows for the whole program to be undermined. It's almost like in one of the Star Wars episodes when Yoda turns to Luke Skywalker and says, no try, do. You just have to do it. And the reframe comes in where you say, I'm no longer a person trying to do something. I'm actually a person who's doing it. So a person who goes to the gym, if they miss a day, the next day they just go to the gym. Or if a writer is writing a book, the writer says, well, I'm not trying to write a book. I'm a writer who writes. And so if I miss a day, the next day I'm just going to start writing again.
It's also happening to us in our, immediate environments as well. Just as an example, say, you're a younger guy, you're living with some roommates, housemates, a couple of good buddies or something, and you want to take on a new program, new approach to life, kind of do things a little differently, and everybody else in the house is up till, 4 a.m. drinking and living the good life, which might be really fun. But that's not going to be conducive for what you want to do. And it sounds really obvious, but a lot of times we get so caught up in what can I do myself that we don't pay proper attention as well to things that are outside of us that are going to be facilitating us in different directions as well. Now, so there's a kind of internal and external process in terms of our defaults and how we're setting ourselves up.
Define a default for me. What are we talking about there?
Default is like a cruise control behavior. So, it's the automatic. It's what we do without thinking. So go back to the guy who's just gotten his new gym membership. He's all revved up. He's got his New Year's resolution. In fact, Josh and I were joking earlier that New Year's resolutions are like Vegas marriages. he's all charged up. Sounds great. it's a new beginning. He wakes up, he's got all of his gear set out because, the New Year's resolution is a great excuse to get a new pair of Nikes. And he gets up and he's going to do a half hour of yoga. Let's just make that the example. And before you know it, he's reaching for the coffee cup. Then, I might as well check my email. Got to see if, you know, anybody responds to me from last night. Boom, there you go. He's already back in his default behaviors.
Mm.
So these are just real. It's a fancy way of saying, which is something you talk about, Tripp, what are we doing when we go unconscious? What are we doing when we're not thinking about things and we're not in the process of awareness? Now, the thing about defaults, though, is that you can shift them so defaults can be more positive and more conducive of what you actually want. But that's how I define a default. Default is kind of cruise control behavior is how we describe it.
All right. And to get back to Josh's point is we need to, before we even, you know, start out on this path, we need to take an inventory of the behaviors, both internal and, you know, kind of the environmental, the exterior stuff that are keeping us where we are. We need to suss that stuff out because that's the stuff that wants to keep us stuck, right?
Exactly.
So it's the internal like mindset things, and then it's just where we live and are we setting ourselves up for failure? So if I roll over and the first thing I do is check email instead of doing yoga, I'm probably, you know, I need to make it a little more difficult to check email. Is that the answer?
Absolutely. One of the concepts that's really important is this concept of choice architecture, which is the immediate design of our environment and how it affects us. So yeah, shut off the laptop and put it in your desk so it's not open first thing in the morning when you roll over.
Okay, I got it. So there's the choice architecture is looking at how we've set up our environment to succeed or to fail. Is it set up to help us do what it is that we want to do? And you're saying that the default is what do we do when we're in autopilot? So if we set up our environment to be supportive of a more positive default, the thing that we want to eventually have become just that autopilot thing, which is good for us, we need to set up our environment to support that, right?
Exactly. Absolutely.
Okay, that makes total sense. That's common sense. But what if I am living with a bunch of assholes that have been up all night, or my, you know, I've got a wife and kids, or how do I control my environment in those situations?
There's only so much you can control in your environment, any given environment, and you do the best you can, really. But ultimately, it's how you are relating to what's going on.
Okay, so I'm getting choice architecture. I'm getting that I can create my environment that supports me in doing this new behavior. And I get that I understand the concept of a default, which is what I do when I'm on autopilot. What else is there?
Nudges, which is the idea that within that choice architecture, there are little pushes that can kind of direct our behaviors in different ways. And one in the example that Josh and I always like to talk about is there's an airport named Schiphol Airport. In the airports, there was a lot of kind of disgusting, but basically the urinals and the men's urinals are really disgusting, particularly gross in this airport. There's a lot of runoff and guys weren't getting it in the urinals. So some guy at the airport had this great... And, you know, when you think about it, it means there's more money to clean this thing up. It's a disgusting job for the guy cleaning it. Anyways, the solution that this brilliant guy at the airport said, he decided to etch little house flies in the middle of the urinals. And that reduced, according to Sunstein and Saylor, that reduced the runoff by about 80%. Because now the guys are aiming at the houseflies.
And they weren't even told to aim at the houseflies. It was just like, oh, wow, here's a target. Let's piss on the fly. And the net benefit was that there was 80% less piss to clean up for the airport janitor, right?
Exactly. and that's a nudge in the environment.
Got it. So, you know, the environment's one thing, but then when a nudge is something that's a little more active, it's a little more like it's going to encourage you to take the right action. But it's also seems to be kind of applying itself to the part of you that's running on autopilot. It's still a little unconscious.
Exactly. It doesn't need to be conscious. So your conscious brain doesn't need to pick it up for it to be effective.
Okay. So I like this because basically what we're talking about here is how can you make your success kind of unconscious? How can we make it like rather unconscious that you'll do the right thing, that you'll start your practice and stick with it?
Like there's this guy, Dan Ariely, who's another big guy in this field, behavioral economics, that Josh and I talk about a lot. And he says one of the takeaway from all of his studies and a lot of his work is you're not in the driver's seat. In other words, you know, you're not out there just making rational decisions and control of your fate all the time. And it's kind of when you recognize that, in some ways, that it is a kind of unconscious process, you can facilitate that in a more positive direction.
I love it. It seems to just take the pressure off of me to always be vigilant of, man, I screwed up again and I need to get back on track. That seems exhausting. But if I just kind of put myself on to, you know, lay the tracks, so to speak, like a train, then I can just follow the tracks and the next step is pretty natural.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
I think we should back up for a second. Loss aversion is this idea that when we lose something, let's say $20 value, we experience it, or the emotional impact of that loss is about twice as much as it would be if we were to gain $20. So, for example, a guy walking down the street sees $20 on the sidewalk and feels a kind of little twitch of excitement. Wow, I just got $20. Fantastic. But the same guy walking down the street realizes he's been pickpocketed and loses $20. That $20 loss is felt twice as heavily as the relative gain of $20. Now, this comes into play when we talk about letting go of default behaviors or default patterns. Because in order to let something go, you have to be aware of the inherent loss aversion that's present. Otherwise, you won't let go of it. This actually gets into what we call the punitive nudge or the punishment nudge, where let's say you want to lose 10 pounds in the next 2 months. And the gain would be the feeling, the self-esteem that comes from having achieved that. That's the gain in the equation. But oftentimes the gain, the prospect of the gain, isn't enough to actually redirect behavior. So the punitive nudge is a system where you buddy up with some guy or a partner and say, okay, I'm going to write you a check for $300. That's outdated to the end of this two month period of time. If I haven't met my weight goal or whatever goal you've prescribed, if I haven't met my goal by that date, you are then free, the buddy is, to cash the check or do whatever they want with that money. The trigger of that gun is only pulled if you haven't achieved what you wanted to do. And therefore, that mobilizes the fear of losing or mobilizes the loss aversion to actually get you to do what you want to do.
I like that. You wouldn't make it impossible to succeed, and you wouldn't put something out there if you didn't really think you could do it. So there's a part of it is like when I lay that consequence out there for myself, there's a part of it's like, ooh, you know, I can feel it in my body. That's always a good consequence when I can feel it in my body. Like, oh man, that's edgy. And you know what? I can do that. I can follow through on that. I believe in myself. And there is something that feels good about that. That challenge, like I'm going to take this on and I'm going to do this.
Yeah, exactly. Great. This principle of loss aversion, this really does keep us stuck in a lot of things, particularly relationships. You know, you're dating someone and you kind of know this isn't the one, this is not the woman of your dreams or the person you imagine sort of walking down the aisle with, but she's nice and she's solicitous and she's caring and you've been in it for 6 months, and because you've been in it for 6 months, you think, well, it's comfortable, and you get sort of anesthetized by that comfort. The loss aversion actually prevents you from ending a dead relationship.
Yeah, we settle. This is better than not having anything. So I'll stick with this.
You know, hey man, it does seem like she, you know, she put your clothes in a bonfire in the backyard. Maybe it's time to back out of that. Well, yeah, but you know, we're both fighting. I mean, she's pretty hot. I don't know.
Yeah, are we talking about me in my 20s now? Is that what's going on? Is that...
If it's no longer applicable, that's good.
Oh man, let's summarize for the guy. So if he's starting a new program, or he's, you know, getting ready to come out of the gate with this new year kind of thing, what does he need to bring to this program so it's damn near impossible to fail?
Take three lessons from
each of the different areas that we identified, the defaults, choice architecture, and the nudges. Starting with the default, getting back to that initial takeaway idea, can you identify unconscious behavior in your life or a kind of default pattern, whether it's the Haagen-Dazs right at, you know, at eye level? It could be something like, you know, internet habits, which will feed into the choice architecture as well. And then can you let go of it? You got to have a cleaning of all the old inventory in order to set up something new.
So I've got to look around and see what are the things that I'm doing unconsciously. I've got to kind of wake up and just, okay, what am I doing here? What are the things that I'm doing? And do these behaviors support the new thing that I'm trying to do?
You want to identify one of the first things you do in the day. If you're talking about establishing one new habit, pick one thing that you're doing already in the day. And for most people, that one thing is email. People get onto the computer, and before they know it, an hour or two have gone by where they're, quote unquote, being productive by cleaning up their inbox. If that's the thing that you can see yourself doing, or you identify yourself doing, then our recommendation would be, okay, for a period of time, whether it's a month or 2 months, really commit to not doing that as the first thing. It can be the second thing you do, but don't let it be the first thing. And make another habit, the more skillful habit, be the first thing you're doing. Okay. Obviously, still get up, go to the bathroom, have a cup of coffee. But when you really click into gear, make sure that new habit is the first default.
That's a choice architecture, and that feeds into the default. So as an example, redoing your fridge to push the food in front of you that you're more likely to want to eat. You know, that's one of the studies these guys talked about, is that you can reduce junk food consumption in this cafeteria without taking away any of the junk food. You just got to lay it out differently. So there's all sorts of little concrete things that you can do in your immediate environment, whether it's your fridge, your office, or even on your computers. Very concrete adjustments in the choice architecture and the design of your environment, just like that, will feed into you being able to get rid of old defaults and establish new ones.
I can hear all the collective whining out there. But I like those things. I like to do that. And but wait. You know, and it's, what's more important here, right? You know, what's more important? What is it that we want to establish? You're not saying don't ever do this stuff, but just give yourself a chance to bring this new behavior in first.
Exactly.
Okay.
And that collective whining is, you know, that's driven by loss aversion.
Whining is loss aversion.
All right. So that's two out of the three. What's the third one?
Last is the nudge. And the nudge is that kind of push in your environment towards a different behavior. It's the fly in the urinal. So one example is putting, you know, say you have a bunch of exercise gear. You have yoga mat, kettlebells, new running shoes, whatever. Don't let that collect dust in the closet. Put that out in the open, right in your face, so you see it, and it's reflected back to you. Transparency is extremely important in this whole process. It will nudge you. If you wake up, you got this new pair of running shoes, and every day you're waking up and you're seeing these spotless, gleaming, brand new shoes, you know you're not doing what you set out to do with them. So give yourself nudges in that environment.
Another really helpful nudge along this theme of feedback transparency is just sort of getting a feedback loop of sort of cataloging what you've done. A notebook that just simply has columns of the day of the week and the action you're trying to establish and how much time you gave to that. Just a few simple columns like that, laying out 7 days a week. Logging those activities into a notebook and writing it down really becomes an effective strategy for sort of cementing the habit.
Be willing to be a little sloppy versus perfectionism is going to keep you stuck. If you're trying to keep it, you're trying to be perfect, you're not actually going to get anything done. So shoot for that moderate sloppy middle and you're more likely to stick with it.
Another way of saying moderate sloppy would be, you know, aim for 100%, but be okay with 80%.
One of the other things that you guys put in the Buddhist playbook was that this notion of variety. and the things that you're doing. So you have a light day, you have a medium day, you have a heavy day. There was something about that that I just liked. Something about like, yeah, I like the variety. I like that, you know what, today's an easy day, I'm going to knock it out. And that gets me more geared up for the heavy day later on. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, this came out of some of the theorizing and approaches to physical development in terms of physical training that a lot of people talk about now. There's this concept called muscle confusion, where the muscles actually benefit from being stressed in different ways than a routine habitual pattern. And we're just taking that concept and applying it to, well, specifically in the Buddhist playbook, we're applying it to the development of the mind in meditation. But it could be applied to any kind of creative endeavor where you have a day of the week where you're doing just a short amount of work, whether it's 15-minute or 10-minute meditation or a 10-minute sprint workout or just 10 minutes of collecting, brainstorming some ideas about the screenplay. And then there's going to be a day where you're going to have a heavy day, where you're going to really hump it and put some serious time into what you're doing, whether it's a longer workout or a longer meditation session or maybe an hour or two of dedicated writing. And then there are other days where we sort of advocate for what we call mixer days, which sort of balance out levels of energy, levels of interest, and sort of stress the mind or body from different angles. So we call those mixer days, where there's days where you vary it. If you're working out only with kettlebells, we say maybe go for a walk or do some yoga. If you're meditating with one specific type of meditation, then we then say on a mixer day, mix it up with a different technique as examples. And then finally, we really advocate for days off, which, again, feed back into this way of overcoming the pitfalls of perfectionism.
What's the one thing, what's the first step that the guy can do today that'll actually have a big impact and get some momentum going? What's the one thing that he can do today?
I guess we would just say challenge some guys to step up and do the punitive nudge. Because, you know, as you were saying, Tripp, it feels great to play with that edge. You know, you're really putting yourself out on the line for something. You're setting a really clear goal. It's a challenge. The adrenaline will spike up a little bit. And the money's on the line, and you'll probably need it. So we would say go for that.
The punitive edge is the one where, let's say if it's a money thing, if my edge is money, I'm going to write a check to my buddy or to some organization that I hate. And
well, that's the killer one. You... take it to that level, right? To someplace you hate. Yeah, you think.
But think about it in terms of New Year's resolutions. Most resolutions say they peter out within the first 3 weeks to a month. So you, by writing that check 2 or 3 months out, you're already stretching the strength of your resolution 3 months into the year.
So just in that way, I'm giving myself a better shot at success because that'll get me over that hump.
Yeah, and then it's going to mobilize all these the reinforced behaviors to make sure you get there.
I like it. Okay, so the big practice that the guy can do today is get his goal, you know, clarify his goal, and then create that punitive nudge, the one that's kind of like that's going to sting a little bit, but it's also the one that ultimately motivates him to take some action. And I like that it's got something to be that the timeline is a little further out than that hump, because there is a hump about 3-4 weeks in where it's just like, this isn't fun anymore, this sucks, I want out. You know what, I don't really need to lose the weight, I look pretty good, you know, like whatever that might be for him.
I look pretty exactly, you know. And another thing obviously too that is really important about this, and maybe this is a positive way of framing it, is it really, you know, you have to establish a realizable, challenging, hard, but doable goal. It gets rid of, like, you know, some perfectionist fantasy of, like, if, you know, your New Year's resolution is everything's going to change, I'm never going to eat sugar again, I'm never going to eat coffee, drink coffee, I'm going to sit, meditate 3 hours a day, whatever. You know, that's not going to happen. And when you set up an absurd goal like that, it falls into that perfectionism trap. And with the punitive nudge, money's on the line, you're going to really come up with something that challenges you, but something that's also really doable and realizable with discipline, effort, and conviction.
Let's run down the big takeaways from this show. Number 1, New Year's resolutions are like Vegas marriages. Number 2, According to Fernando Flores, hope is the raw material of losers. When you don't account for the hidden forces that keep you right where you are, hoping that you can somehow make a significant change is a joke. You need more than just good intentions. Consider how your beliefs and your immediate environment shape your results and create a plan to have them work for you instead of against you. Number 3. When setting out to make some positive changes, take an inventory of your default behaviors. What do you do when you're on autopilot? Being aware of what you do when you're unconscious will allow you to swap it out with a new, positive default. Number 4. Choice architecture is when you arrange your environment to encourage better choices. Want to cut back on the sweets? Don't put them within arm's reach. Create the opportunity for you to unconsciously make a better choice by making it more difficult to make the bad one. Number 5. Nudges are unconscious reminders to do the right thing. Like those little bees and flies painted in the urinal, they encourage you to stay on target. Look around your environment and put little nudges here and there to help you unconsciously take the positive action. Number 6. Perfectionism sucks. It undermines sustained discipline. It sounds weird, but shoot for sloppy moderation. Aim for 100%, but be satisfied with 80%. Number 7. You'll feel the loss of $20 twice as much as if you had gained it. Use this to your advantage. Create a punitive nudge to keep you on track. Write a check to your friend Kanye West and post-date it 3 months from now. If you don't meet your goal, he gets to cash it. The loss aversion will have you dig deep to stay on track, and with the 3-month time frame, you'll get over the dip that occurs after just a few weeks. Number 8. Set a goal that is challenging yet realistic. Go for singles and doubles instead of home runs. Build momentum by knocking down your goals consistently. And number 9, vary your routine. Sticking to the same old will bore you and produce lackluster results. Use the principle of muscle confusion to have heavy, light, and mixer days, and definitely take some recovery time. This will keep your practice fresh and inviting. So tell me a little bit about the Buddhist Playbook. I mean, what are we talking about here? Where can we get it?
The Buddhist Playbook is a sort of a theoretical or applied theoretical model on how to effectively establish meditative habits and then how to apply those meditative habits to other areas of your life. So half the book is the theory and how to apply the theory. And then the other half of the book is a 2-month workbook, which serves as training wheels to guide you through 2 months of training to effectively establish those habits that we talk about in the book. And the Buddhist Playbook is available online at our website, which is sakisolutions.com. Saki is one word, S and Sam, A-T-I, solutions.com.
Michael, Josh, thank you so much for coming on the show. This is a ton of information. And the guys may need to listen to this show a couple of times, but I think you guys are netting it out. Like, this is about helping that guy that's starting to see that he can do more. This is about helping him lay the tracks and the pathway to actually get it done, and to do that without making his life even more miserable or even more of a burden. So I appreciate the work you guys are doing. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks so much, Trip.
That was an absolute pleasure, Trip. Thanks so much.
If you're thinking about taking what you're hearing on The New Man and making it a reality in your life, check out the free video available at thenewmanlife.com. That's thenewmanlife.com. Thanks for listening.